This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
As well as Ernesto Media on Twitter. Where else can you lend a big hand and not even have to leave the house or even get dressed up? Program evaluations for KPFT are fun and easy, so help us out today. This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Belinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Brian Lavinka.
Summer Iman.
And Glenn Holt.
Yes.
And and on tonight's program, it's News Wrap from This Way Out, a weekly news summary of events in the GLBT world. Tonight, reporting on, among other things, President Barack Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's condemnation of Uganda's proposed Kill the Gays legislation. And a petition is circulating in the UK protesting the pending state-funded visit of Roman Catholic Pope Benedict XVI. The National Center for Transgender Equality is a nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing the equality of transgender people. Director Mara Kiesling will be discussing progress on ENDA, hate crimes, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and the appointment of Amanda Simpson to the Commerce Department as the first openly transgender person appointed to the Obama administration. And at the top of our second hour tonight, the Foundation for Family and Marriage Equality is hosting a march and demonstration for the right to marry. The event will be held this coming Friday. It begins at the County Clerk's Office on Caroline Street and then proceeds to City Hall, where a rally will be held. Barry Ouellette will be joining us with the details. And then at 10:22, the Center for AIDS is hosting a fundraiser at the end of the month featuring out comedian Eddie Safarty of New York. He has appeared on The Today Show, Comedy Central's Premium Blend, and Logo's Wisecrack, and concurrently be seen in the documentary Laughing Matters. The fundraiser will be held February 29th at Riva's Restaurant. Opening the show will be Houston's own coffee, along with Eddie, and we're hoping that Eddie will be able to join us on the phone for that. And then at 10:37, we have our weekly feature segments from This Way Out tonight, looking at the impact of Don't Ask, Don't Tell on the U.S. military.
Well, we're going to have a little bit change of plans if you were reading our webpage. We're going to go first to This Way Out.
Yes, we are, and it's going to take me just a moment to make that happen.
We need to make an announcement.
Yes.
An announcement.
Let's make a new change of plans.
Yes. From time to time, we get event listings from community groups, and we, for whatever reason, we can't get them on. So I wanted to give a shout-out to the Lesbian Health Initiative's planned event for this Saturday, February 13th. It's called the Celebration of Love, and it's happening at the Renaissance Hotel, and it includes dinner, dancing, and a comedic act. Tickets are reasonable. We can't discuss ticket prices on our show as we are a nonprofit, but they can be obtained at lhihouston.org. Again, this is the Celebration of Love this Saturday, February 13th at the Renaissance Hotel, and doors open at 6:30. So check it out, lhihouston.org. Thank you.
Also, the Community Center is having their newly reformed dinner night tomorrow. It's at the West Gray Cafe at 6:30 p.m., which is on West Gray, just a little bit west of Taft. It's free to everybody. Of course, you have to pay for your own meal. But basically, they're going to be discussing things. For example, Tim Brookover just came back from Creating Change in Dallas, I know we're going to have him on probably in March to talk about that. So that's another event that's happening tomorrow.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Santina Giordano.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending February 6, 2010. Lawmakers in Albania approved major legislation on February 4th that bans discrimination based on gender, race, color, ethnicity, religion, and sexual orientation. The measure, passed by the ruling Democratic Party and its allies in Parliament, had the strong support of Prime Minister Sali Berisha. But he had also promised that rights for same-gender couples would be included in the legislation. Parliament apparently bowed to strong opposition to that idea from Muslim, Orthodox, and Catholic Church leaders. Until 1995, private consensual adult homosexual acts carried a 10-year prison term in Albania, one of only two predominantly Muslim countries in Europe. Passage of the anti-bias measure is seen as furthering the country's bid to join the European Union. The Alliance Against Discrimination, an Albanian LGBT advocacy group, lamented the absence of couples recognition, but called the legislation a victory for democracy and for human rights for all Albanians. According to the European branch of the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans, and Intersex Association, known by the acronym ILGA, the new anti-bias legislation also covers gender identity.
Some 400 LGBT leaders from 35 countries attended the 5th Latin America and Caribbean Regional ILGA Conference at the end of January in Curitiba, Brazil. President Luis Inácio Lula da Silva sent a message saying, "The fight against intolerance and discrimination and the consequent efforts to respect human nature, including sexual orientation, have guided our government since its first mandate." He also expressed support for the government's third national human rights plan, which favors a national civil unions law. Delegates heard that 11 nations in the region still criminalize gay sex. Antigua and Barbuda, Barbados, Belize, Dominica, Grenada, Guyana, Jamaica, St. Lucia, St. Kitts and Nevis, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and Trinidad and Tobago. Activists from 8 of those nations were in attendance. A number of pre-conferences addressed HIV, homophobia in schools, lesbian and bisexual women's issues, transgender concerns, youth issues, racism, health matters, art and culture, and the media. Conference support came from the United Nations, the Pan American Health Organization, the Global Fund for Women, and several Brazilian federal, state, and city agencies.
But a top Brazilian general came under fire this week for saying that even though open gays and lesbians can serve in his country's military, they should not hold leadership positions. General Raimundo Nonato told a Senate commission considering his appointment to head Brazil's top military court that a soldier in a command position who's known to be gay will not be obeyed by his subordinates in combat situations. Brazilian LGBT rights organizations and the Brazilian Bar Association said Nonato's remarks made him unfit for the job as military court chief. Senator Eduardo Suplicy of the ruling Workers' Party joined the unanimous commission vote to approve Nonato's appointment, but he said that he would ask the full Senate to delay a confirmation vote until the general can be called back for more questioning.
A young man in Malawi was arrested this week for putting up posters championing queer equality. The police said they were also searching for others they believe are working with foreigners in an organized pro-gay campaign. Officials said 21-year-old Peter Sawali was arrested for putting up posters with gay rights messages on a main road in Blantyre, the largest city in the East African nation. Officials said he had stacks of what they described as expertly and expensively printed posters displaying such messages as "gay rights are human rights." Police spokesman Dave Chingwalu said Sawali would be charged with conduct likely to cause a breach of peace, which is punishable by up to 3 months in jail. "We cannot rule out international sponsors because of the quality and the quantity of the posters," he said. "They might even have been produced outside." Debate over homosexuality in the conservative country has been sparked by the trial of a gay couple charged with unnatural acts and gross indecency, felonies punishable by up to 14 years in prison. Malawi's government has been internationally criticized for prosecuting Stephen Monjeza and Taiwangi Chambalanga, each in his 20s, who were denied bail and have been behind bars since late December. They were arrested after holding an engagement party that drew crowds of curious onlookers. Hearings in the trial have attracted homophobic crowds. The next court date is pending.
Elsewhere in Africa, Uganda's parliament could soon debate a proposed law that would impose the death penalty in some cases involving consensual adult same-gender sex. According to several reports, the bill was born soon after visits to the country by several U.S. evangelical and so-called change therapy advocates. One such group, whose members include both the MP who sponsored the Kill the Gays bill in Uganda and the country's ethics minister, is called the Family. It's a secretive evangelical Christian network based in Washington, D.C., with political ties around the world. The family has reluctantly been in the news in recent months because three of its conservative U.S. Republican members, a governor and two congressmen, have been embroiled in adulterous sex scandals tied to the C Street House, a residential facility in D.C. that the group claims as a church. The family has sponsored the annual National Prayer Breakfast in the U.S. Capitol for many years. Beginning with Dwight Eisenhower in the 1950s, every U.S. president has attended the event, which also draws foreign diplomats, U.S. politicians, and business, military, and religious leaders. President Barack Obama continued that tradition on February 4th. Also attending was Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Both addressed the proposed Ugandan legislation during their prepared remarks.
I recently called President Museveni, whom I have known through the prayer breakfast, and expressed the strongest concerns about a law being considered in the Parliament of Uganda.
We may disagree about gay marriage, but surely we can agree that it is unconscionable to target gays and lesbians for who they are, whether it's here in the United States or, as Hillary mentioned, more extremely and odious laws that are being proposed most recently in Uganda.
Because of the family's ties to the anti-gay legislation, queer and queer-friendly activists held an alternative event on the same day, the American Prayer Hour, in several U.S. cities. One of its organizers was openly gay Episcopal Bishop V. Gene Robinson. He was also among those who had lobbied Obama to use the National Prayer Breakfast to speak out against the Uganda bill.
Soon after President Obama's critical comments about the Kill the Gays legislation at the National Prayer Breakfast, Uganda's Deputy Foreign Minister Henry Okello Oryem told the BBC's Network Africa program that, "I am sure the bill will take a different form when it is tabled on the floor in Parliament." Oryem did not give specific details about possible changes, but he added that the government doesn't have the power to offer amendments while it remains a private member's bill. Uganda preacher Martin Sempa is an outspoken opponent of LGBT rights and a close friend of high-profile U.S. evangelical pastor Rick Warren, who spoke out against the draconian measure after being criticized for not doing so. However, Sempa continues to strongly endorse the bill's death penalty provision and has claimed that gays recruit and can be cured of their sexual orientation. He screened gay porn during an event in Kampala in late January to rally support for the measure, although many in the audience reportedly walked out before two so-called ex-gays Sempa had brought to the event could speak about their alleged conversion to heterosexuality.
And finally, more than 7,000 people have signed a petition protesting a state-funded visit to the UK by Roman Catholic Pope Benedict XVI. According to Britain's Pink News, the petition was initiated on February 1st by the National Secular Society following the Pope's comments the previous week criticizing UK equality legislation. The group estimates the pontiff's four-day visit in September will cost the UK £20 million. Negotiations over who will pay for the visit are said to be ongoing, although taxpayers are likely to foot the bill for security costs. Benedict has repeatedly said that granting rights to LGBT people violates the natural law. He's compared equality efforts to the destruction of the rainforests and other planetary woes, and has opposed the distribution of condoms in Africa to stem the tide of HIV. The National Secular Society argues that taxpayers shouldn't have to pay for the visit when the Pope is likely to attack equal rights and promote discrimination. Terry Sanderson, its president, told Pink News that this is a PR disaster for the Pope, and he specializes in them. His reactionary nature drives people away.
That's News Wrap for the week ending February 6, 2010. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Santina Giordano.
nagging acolyte. Then you kiss me in open door. Oh God, there's something about you. The lines are erased. There's something about you. The cells interchange. There's something about you now. Never safe, 'cause my sense of place. Time for me. I don't pick just anyone. Gods will come and go, but you're both divine. Ooh, if anything can spare my desperate ego, when you're old and drinking tea alone, give me a chance to love. Oh God, there's something about you. The lines are erased. Something about you that says it's a church. There's something about you now. Been loud now. Something about you. If you're ever gone, I'm nowhere without you. My light in the fog, I'm nowhere without you. I go never safe, never safe. 'Cause in my sense of place, sense of place, sense of you. Don't complete. We can't let ourselves in tune.
was Darren Crockett and the name of the song Celebrity Du Jour from his 2009 single Shark Meat. And before that, Dylan Rice with a song called Merge, actually from 2010, very recent. The name of the album Electric Grids and Concrete Towers. This is Queer Voices. So, who saw the Super Bowl?
We're not going to talk about that.
Yes, I saw it. I saw
but,
it.
But did you see the commercial for Man Crunch?
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I
did. It's a trick question.
No, you didn't. That's right, it's a trick question.
Well, I saw it, but not on the Super Bowl.
It's, I think they actually got more publicity from not being on than they did from being on.
What about the casual wear work?
Oh, I only saw the last 10 minutes of the whole thing.
Oh, you didn't watch it at all?
No, no, no.
I watched the whole thing. I love football.
Yeah. I was just telling Brian that I watched it the way I love to watch it. I DVR'd it, and so I didn't watch it for the first 40 minutes. So when I started watching it recorded, I could speed up all of the football game portion and then slow down for the
commercials.
I like the Clydesdale and the Longhorn one. You know, not even a fence can keep friends apart.
A program note, we were supposed to have Megan Stabler from Pride on tonight, and somehow the wires got crossed where she thought she was going to call in. And generally when we do a long interview with a local person, we'd rather have them in the studio because it sounds so much better. So we will try to schedule that sometime before Pride this year and talk about what's going on at Pride. I understand they hired a part-time executive director. Certainly there's some issues in that the parade was much smaller last year, and where the outreach to the community is. So we'll cover those subjects in a future show, hopefully as soon as possible. JD got a nice write-up in this month's issue. To let you know, this month's issue of Outsmart is out, and there's a very nice article about our very own JD and the fact that he's starting a new internet radio show that's called Outradio. His monthly show that appears here usually on the third Monday in the second hour is going to be on next week because we're preempted on the fourth Monday this month because of fundraising. So you can read about that. I would imagine this article is online, but better pick up an Outsmart. It's all around the community. And JD is celebrating his 10th year here on Queer Voices.
Very good. So this weekend is Valentine's Day, as some of my friends call Single Awareness Day. So I was
Single Awareness?
Yeah. And I know
I'm already aware that I'm single.
I think it's even more pronounced on Valentine's Day because everything is all pro-couple and love, love, love.
Oh, yes, all the couples out there is nauseating, especially when you're alone.
Yeah, so they call it Single Awareness Day. But, you know, I have fun.
You have somebody.
I know. I don't feel guilty.
Why don't you just rub it in?
I don't want to rub it in, but I feel very lucky.
I should give all the singles out there your email address to call and harass you. You're on Facebook.
I am on Facebook, but we have dinner plans, and then we're going to go out for a night of dancing. We haven't been out for a while, so.
That sounds like awfully fun. Where y'all going to go?
We're going to go to South Beach.
South Beach.
For the red party.
Oh. Glenn, where are you going?
Well, I'm one of those happily single people, so I'm probably, I'm going to be playing volleyball, and after that I'm going to be at home in bed sleeping, which is my favorite thing to do.
Home sleeping?
Yeah.
Good, good, good.
That
Summer?
Polishing the cats, you know, one of the other things.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, hey, you mean you're talking about fur people, right?
Yeah.
It's intern Summer.
What intern
I'll
Summer?
Doing something, something, something.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is Summer, our intern. You're going to be doing something, something?
Yeah, yeah. Me and Jennifer will be doing something, something, something.
Well, and as I said in the intro to the show, there is an event sponsored by LHI for, it's a fundraiser, and it's going to be at the Renaissance Hotel. So if you are of the female persuasion who like females, I think that would be a good event. And I'm sure they're open to men as well.
I am.
There you go.
And when is it again?
It is this Saturday. It's the day before Valentine's.
Okay.
Doors open at 6:30 at the Renaissance Hotel, and it's called the Celebration of Love. And normally we have them on, and Deborah, I'm sorry we didn't get them on. She sent me an email, and we're trying to do justice to the event. So check out LHIHouston.org to find out more information.
All right. I'll keep that in mind. That's Saturday, right?
Saturday night, yes.
Okay.
And I do need to reinforce the idea that AIDS Walk is coming up, and you know we need to raise money for the community, and there are several teams, and go to AIDSWalkHouston.org and find a team and join and raise money and walk, more importantly.
And raise money for AIDS. Well, yes. Tell us a little bit about the organization, since you are the leader.
Well, I'm the board chair of a organization that is a partner for AIDS Walk Houston. And if you're not aware, AIDS Walk Houston...
And which organization is that?
That is the Center for AIDS.
Ah, okay.
And AIDS Walk Houston...
Well,
I'm sure we'll get there at some point. But AIDS Walk Houston is an organization or an event put on by several partner organizations, and they have teams that walk and raise money for HIV/AIDS on March 14th, Sunday. And it's about 15,000 people, and they start downtown, and they go down Allen Parkway. And if you haven't done it before, it's a sight to behold. It's like a river of people flowing down Allen Parkway. And they raise, you know...
How much money did they raise last year?
It was over $1 million, I think.
Over $1 million?
Yeah, and I don't know, last year I think it was a little bit down because of the economy, but a year before it was $1 million.
What about this year? Do they have any anticipation of the participants?
Well, I am pushing our team to be the number one team. We were number two last year, so I'm sending out the vibes to make us number one and have a lot of walk-ups.
How many people would it take to be number one?
Well, it's not about the number of people, it's about the money raised.
Okay.
So...
But wouldn't more people equate to more money?
Yes, it would. So I want both. I want money raised and people walking.
Couple things in the arts community. I, Barbara Jordan, will be shown this Saturday and the following Saturday. This is sort of a strange time, but it's at 10 a.m. I believe they're doing this during the week for, like, the schools. But it will be open to the public. The tickets are really cheap. Hopefully it's not sold out yet, but you can call 713-220-5700 for more, and then enter number one for more information. Tickets are not available online. I think you just have to do the phone reservations. Looks like a really, really good play, and like I says, hopefully it's not sold out. Also, the River Oaks announced, you know, that they do the midnight show every week. They're planning to play Casablanca like at 10 o'clock in the morning one of these weekends, and I'm guessing that they want to see if there's like a place to do like an early morning Saturday type of art movie, which looks really interesting. I'd love to see that get back to what the River Oaks does.
Yeah, on Barbara Jordan, where is that going to be?
Yeah, I'm sorry, the Alley Theater, which is downtown, and you can check out Alley Theater .org for more information.
That was one of those things that Barbara Jordan, I was just so proud of her. God, just when I would see her speak, it was just wonderful, very moving during that whole period.
I don't know what you just said.
Mars on the phone.
Oh, okay. All right, let's take a little break here, and we'll be back with our interview.
Wanted to hear. It was as if I wished for you and then you appeared. You had me hook, line, and catch. You even had my friend thinking it was gonna last. Then you vanished as quick as you came, disappearing like a teardrop in the rain. Now you're running round like you're in.
last I saw of you was the last time I cared. I'm coming back with a vengeance. You know if you had any intelligence, black milk sitting down for days. The more I know you, the more sour you taste.
Name of the artist, Eric Hyman, and the title of the track, well, it's untitled. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Linka.
And we have on our phone tonight, we have Mara Kiesling with the National Center for Transgender Equality. Now, it is a 501c3 social justice organization dedicated to advancing the equality of transgender people through advocacy, collaboration, and empowerment. Welcome, Mara.
Mara, are you out there?
I sure am. Good evening. How are you guys?
Yeah, how's the weather? Well, she's in Washington, you know, D.C., by the way, and I already knew that, and y'all didn't.
Snowmageddon.
Yeah, I just got back from Dallas. I was in Dallas for the weekend for the Creating Change Conference, and got stuck there a couple extra days and finally got home at about 7 p.m. this evening.
Oh, well, I'm glad you could make it to be on part and be our show.
I'm so excited to be here.
I read the little piece that I got off the website about Intact, but tell us more about the organization.
Well, the organization is NCTE, the National Center for Transgender Equality, and as you said, we're a social justice organization. The short version is that we primarily do federal policy, that is, work to change national laws to not just laws, I shouldn't say that, but also policies and programs to be more fair for transgender people to help improve the lives of transgender people.
Now, one of the items that's been really in the mix for many, many years, maybe decades, is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which under the Obama administration seems to be moving a little bit better as for inclusive ENDA, and we did a lot of radio broadcasts about the non-inclusive one last go around. Tell us where we are on ENDA, which is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act.
Well, I apologize. Sorry. I'm very optimistic about ENDA this year, particularly as to getting it passed in the House of Representatives. Everything this Congress seems to be a little harder in the United States Senate. In fact, that's sort of a general rule. And in this case, I think we're all here in D.C. very optimistic about getting it through the House, and guardedly optimistic about also getting it through the Senate. I also believe I think think most people here working on the bill think that President Obama will sign it if it's passed by both chambers.
Now, in the Senate, speaking of such, Ted Kennedy was a champion of that bill and a champion of INDA for everyone, and his untimely death really was a setback in a way. Has that been felt that way, or do we feel optimistic?
Well, Senator Kennedy's passing was a blow to a lot of progressive efforts, legislative and otherwise. You know, he was also a real champion of health care reform and a lot of other things. So Senator Kennedy is really, really sorely missed. One last gift he gave to the LGBT community was he carefully thought about who he would like to see take up the mantle and the effort on ENDA, and he asked Senator Merkley from Oregon if he would do it, and Senator Merkley is really the ideal person for this. When Senator Merkley was in the was the Speaker of the Oregon State House, he led the effort to pass the Oregon Human Rights Law that includes both sexual orientation and gender identity. So Senator Merkley is extremely experienced and skilled at educating other legislators about LGBT people and about the obstacles we face in being able to keep employment. So, you know, Senator Merkley is just jumped right in and is just an incredible champion for fairness and equality. And he's just great to work with and is doing great work.
You know, for many of us out in the flyover country, you know, we watch what's going on and listen to the talking heads about the Senate. It just seems like the whole Senate is dysfunctional at this moment.
Well, if I could put on my political science hat for a minute, and that's where my my academic background is.
Please do.
You know, the Senate was in some ways meant to be a moderating force on the House of Representatives, with the House of Representatives really being the people's body and the Senate being more of an elite upper crust kind of a thing. And while the House could get all caught up in what the people wanted, the Senate was to think about whether or not it was really a good idea. And that's always meant that the Senate was a little stodgy or a little slower, but right now we're just seeing a minority in the Senate that really has figured out how to hijack the process and stop it. But you know, that being said, you know, ENDA has some really, really great support. I mean, one of the biggest champions has been Senator Susan Collins from Maine, who is a Republican. This isn't really a Republican or Democratic thing, though, I mean, it is true that most of our votes will come from Democrats. They won't all come from Democrats. And, you know, importantly, in order to get something passed, right now there's only 47 Democrats in the Senate and two independents, and then, you know, 41 Republicans. I'm sorry, I meant 57. I don't know if I said 47 or 57, but I meant 57 Democrats, two independents, and 41 Republicans.
We got the math. And it may be important to explain the real importance for the transgender community for ENDA. Many people, you know, I know some young people here in Houston who think we already have these kind of protections. And, I mean, sort of delusional about such things, but it's vitally important that this happen. Would you sort of explain some of the repercussions or protections that'll come, especially for the transgender community, which are covered under gender identity or expression?
Well, I'll tell you. I'll give you a really, really good example. I was on Facebook the other day. I can't believe, as old as I am, that I've figured out how to use it, but I was on Facebook the other day and I was contacted by someone in the Houston area who had worked for a government contractor, and when she announced that she was transitioning from male to female, the contracting company fired her, her employer fired her because they claimed that the government agency for which they worked wouldn't like to have a transgender person in her position, so they just fired her. And though President Obama has very clearly expressed that gender identity is a protected category in terms of federal employment, as, by the way, is anything that is unrelated to the job, you know, unrelated to doing your job in the federal government, you're not supposed to be discriminated against. And this past year, President Obama expressed that that did include gender identity. But she didn't work for the government. She worked for a government contractor, and she was in Texas where there are no statewide laws. And this person, who has a very specialized profession, has now lost her job, lost her income, and as is so often the case with transgender people, and frankly with gay, lesbian, bisexual people, you know, usually when we lose our jobs, we lose our careers. And that can cascade into a whole lot of other financial and personal crises. It is a economically and personally violent thing to do to somebody, and it is perfectly legal almost everywhere in the country.
And that's the so important for all of us to be aware of what INDA is all about. Because I know I have heard, as you have, I don't know how many times, that, oh, it's creating a protected class, when in essence it's just allowing people to have a fair opportunity at employment.
That's right. And, you know, the truth is most employers now are understanding that. That, you know, if they want to do their jobs, if they want to make their profits or reach their goals, whatever those are, they need to have the best possible people. And if you, you know, give in to the old stereotypes and ignorances and hatreds, you're going to lose out on some of the really absolute best people. And some of the most absolute best people I know are LGBT. You know, sure, there's a lot of good people who aren't LGBT, but... boy, LGBT people, there's just so many amazing ones. And, you know, whether they're good at their job isn't going to be about whether they're gay or whether they're transgender or whether they're bisexual.
Yeah. And to sort of segue from that into the conversation that has been going on about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Now, it's always been talked about the gays and lesbians in
sure.
military service. Where does the transgender fall in that, in the whole issue around Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
Well, the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Don't Pursue policy doesn't wasn't meant to impact transgender people. Transgender people are excluded from military service, but not directly because of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. Now, it's true that trans people get caught up in that net because the kind of people who discriminate, the kind of people who hate, usually aren't discerning enough to tell the difference between a gay person, a transgender person, a bisexual person. You know, it's all gay people to them, or it's all, you know, queer people or those people. So transgender people often will get caught up in it if a commanding officer or another colleague suspects somebody is transgender, or, you know, just somehow can out them as transgender. Often they will be dismissed under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But transgender people, even with the elimination of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, transgender people will not still be permitted to serve openly. There are medical exclusions for transgender people and other ways that trans folks can get excluded from the military.
Okay. Well, one of the things that did occur that caught my eye was the appointment of Amanda Simpson to, wasn't it the Commerce Department?
That's right. That's right.
And now, I had under, now the stuff I read said that this was the first openly female to, a male to female transgender to be appointed by the Obama administration. Is that correct? You know, sometimes you get the news gets it wrong more times than not.
Well, you know, I can't absolutely guarantee that. I do know that there was a transgender man named Dylan Orr who was who began his job in the federal government as an appointee just before Amanda did. I mean, by weeks. I mean, they, you know, from my point of view, they were both about the same time. I have no idea when each of them got their appointment. They're both people I know. I didn't know Mr. Orr until after his appointment, but Amanda's been a friend of mine for a while, and until her appointment was served on our board of directors.
Hasn't there been another one since then?
There has, in fact, since been an appointment to a presidential advisory commission on HIV/AIDS, and there are probably others. I think it's going to become a less and less remarkable thing every time. And you know, my hat's off to the president and his administration. They've decided to take a rather revolutionary approach and hire the best people they can find for the job without regard for, you know, whether they're, you know, a particular race or a particular religion or, you know, have a particular, you know, fealty to the administration. So it almost, the way they're working, it almost is unremarkable that they're naming transgender people to the government. It is truly remarkable because it hasn't happened before. But other than that, it's just in the normal course of business. They're looking for the best people. And when the best people are trans, those people get the jobs.
I just was handed a note a moment ago, and that Rachel Maddow had said on her show that there was that she understood that there was a female transgender in the Labor Department. And do you know anything about that? I don't mean to just throw that out of the way, but they handed it to me.
So put her on the spot.
Yeah, put her on the spot. Well, she already qualified that there may be more that she didn't know about. So, yeah.
I don't know what Rachel Maddow is meaning or who Rachel Maddow is meaning there. You know, we are so busy with so many things. You know, we're not going to do a run and tally of the transgender people who get appointed to the administration. I know of only one appointee to the Labor Department, and it happens to be a transgender man. But, you know, there well could be others, and, you know, there are going to be others. You know, the federal government is full of transgender people. the federal government isn't entirely transgender people. I don't mean full that way. But there are lots of transgender people who work for the federal government, and a lot who are in very senior management positions. The question of whether or not they are presidential appointees is a different question. And, you know, there are just lots of trans women, lots of trans men, lots of trans people who identify other ways in the federal government.
Well, you know, there was another little item that came up. David Letterman, after Amanda was appointed, made a rather off-color joke about it. And, you know, obviously Letterman never apologizes for anything, but he said he wouldn't apologize for that either. Yeah. Were you even aware of that?
Oh, I was very aware of it.
And I figured you would be.
We expressed our displeasure. You know, what he did was, there were, I would say, three problems with it. One is it was, you know, stereotyping. It was bad for, it was just bad for a whole group of people. It really, I think, makes a lot of people feel bad when that kind of thing happens. Second, it was a really very personal, vicious attack on Amanda, who certainly doesn't deserve it. And you look at her resume, and you know she's qualified for this job. And third, you know, he violated the number one rule of comedy, which was he just wasn't funny. You know, it was a stupid, sophomoric, juvenile prank that just wasn't funny. And he was personally vicious towards somebody he didn't know. And he was vicious towards a whole community of people who just plain don't deserve it.
Well, that's David Letterman. You know, just ask
no
some
comment.
Of yeah. I'll comment. You know, he got off scot-free behind all the sexual harassment of all the women on his staff. Come on, give me a break. This guy dodged the bullet on a lot of things. One additional thing I wanted to talk about was we did have a good victory in many sorts, and that was the hate crimes bill.
Oh, Absolutely. You know, the Matthew Shepard Hate Crimes Prevention Act became the first real positive law on the books, you know, for LGBT people. And there have been some other little things on sexual orientation, but this was really the first time gender identity went into federal law at all in a you know, vicious and stigmatizing way. And it's a really important statement from Congress and from the President of the United States that it's not okay to kill transgender people. You know, Houston has had a huge problem over the years with transgender people not always being safe. But it's also true of the rest of Texas and the rest of the United States. So, you know, the Hate Crimes Prevention Act, or the Matthew Shepard Hate Crimes Prevention Act, is a good first step. You know, it's a statement from the government. It also is going to, you know, make it so that the federal government, in particular the Justice Department, the FBI, and those kind of folks, are trained on LGBT stuff, and on trans identities and on all the violence that's committed against us. What it won't do, it's really interesting, since it passed, I've heard a lot from transgender and other people who sort of misunderstand what it will do. You know, it will not increase any penalties for anybody who commits commits hate violence, and it will not make every hate crime a federal crime. You know, it only applies to violent acts. But the only time the federal government will get directly involved after the fact will be if either A, the local government asks for federal assistance, local/state government,
right,
or if the federal government determines that the local or state government isn't taking the crime seriously, and then the federal government can certify it as a federal crime and step in. But you know, it will directly in those ways just impact, you know, a handful of hate crimes against LGBT people. You know, since the law that it modifies went on the books decades ago, there's never been a year where more than 10 hate crimes were, you know, classified as federal hate crimes this way. So, you know, it may add another one, two or so. You know, the Justice Department has a lot of community relations people who work to decrease tensions, whether they be racial tensions or tensions based on religion, et cetera. And now, they'll be doing consulting and training based on sexual orientation and gender identity, too, as well as gender and disability, which are the other new categories.
Right. Now, if the people out there listening that hear this wanted help, want to do something about it, what can they do? What can they do? How do they contact your organization? And what can they do to in their own day-to-day lives to help further acceptance, protection for GLBT people, especially the T?
Sure. Boy, Jennifer, I'll tell you, you know, the transgender part of the movement and the rest of the LGBT movement has just moved at warp speed over the last few years. And that's not because of people like me in Washington and the really amazing, amazing staff we now have at NCT. It's, you know, we're just a tiny, tiny part of it. It is really the people back home. It is really everybody who's listening to us tonight who, you know, who go out and they educate their families, or they go to school and they be good examples to other students, or they go to church or synagogue or mosque and teach people that we can be really good people and we can be strong people. And that's the most important thing people can do. And I would say this way, when you're thinking, I'm talking to listeners now, when you're thinking about what you can do, I think you have to think about what part of it amazes you. There's so much to do now, and if some particular kind of work amazes you, that's what you should do. Because you can't be an amazing person, you can't be an amazing activist, unless you are yourself amazed. So find the kind of activism that works for you, whether it be doing phone banks to a member of Congress to get ENDA passed, or if it's working to get, to help eliminate prison rape, or to help immigration reform, or to just provide support, very personal support for LGBT people you know in a support group or whatever.
Yeah. Myra, I want to thank you for coming on. We've just about run out of time. Give us the email address or the websites and contact information real quickly
sure.
So they can get in touch with you.
Website's www.transequality.org. Again, www.transequality.org. And our phone number is 202-903-0112.
We've been talking with Myra Kiesling, director of the National Center for Transgender Equality. Thank you very much, Myra.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
This is Queer Voices.
KPFT has a fun drive coming up, and we need your help to make it a success. You get a chance to meet new friends, make new contacts, and help out your community radio station. Our phone volunteer trainings will be held at KPFT Studios, 419 Lovett Boulevard, near downtown Houston. In just an hour or two, you can help us handle pledges. Your efforts make a difference and can make this a fun and successful drive. To participate in our upcoming pledge drive, contact Eddie Garcia at 713-526-4000 extension 316 or email volunteer@kpft.org. You are tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio KPFT Houston.
Pacifica is listener-sponsored radio. What does that mean?
Listener sponsorship is an answer to the practical problem of getting better radio programs and keeping them.
A focus on advertisers or the mass audience accounts for the mediocrity of corporate radio.
When listeners support the radio they enjoy, their choices become better.
Listener sponsorship takes control of your radio out of the hands of companies and into the hands of the community.
But maintaining this sort of radio requires you.
Your pledge of support keeps KPFT on the air as a vital community resource.
So call our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314, to become a member today.
You can even go online at kpft.org to make your pledge.
Your pledge is essential to keep listener sponsorship viable for generations to come.
So call 713-526-4000 to support KPFT.
This is commercial-free listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio.
KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Political satirist Ray Zimmerman, described as being scaldingly funny and laser accurate, will be performing in a fundraiser for KPFT's news department on Friday, February 12th, that's this coming Friday, at 8 p.m. at the Unitarian Fellowship of Houston on Wirt Road. Tickets are available online, and you can find them at kpft.org.
And, of course, this weekend is Valentine's Day, and I don't know if it's a coincidence, but there's also a march and demonstration for the right to marry. And there is a foundation in Houston called the Foundation for Family and Marriage Equality, and in the studio tonight we have the president, Barry Ouellette. I hope I got that right.
Exactly.
And Eric Marine.
Yes.
Tell us about the Foundation for Family and Marriage Equality.
Well, you're actually right. It's not a coincidence. We do this every year in conjunction with the National Freedom to Marry Week.
Oh, okay. So it's a national movement.
It's a national movement. And so we founded this group back in 1992 to highlight the rights that are important to lesbian, LGBT families, but that were still denied under the Texas Constitution now because of Prop 2 that passed back in 1995, right. And similar ones that are passing like Prop 8 that people know about in California, but where it says that, you know, we can't get married, and we don't have the rights to do that, and we can't have anything that even looks like that. So
you're going to go to the county clerk's office, and you're going to line up, and you're going to say, I want to get married, and they're going to deny you.
Yeah, yeah. We've done that for the past about 5 years now. And our couples walk in. I've done it myself. And we walk in there and we get rejected. And I guess the hard part for me is, at first I thought I was just doing it to protest. But when you actually hear that person say no to you, it makes a huge impact. I think most of our couples come out of there kind of with tears in their eyes, and you just really feel like second class citizens and just not equal, right? So
from there you march to City Hall, I understand.
Yeah, we kind of protest there with some signs that talk about the different rights that come with marriage, because I don't think a lot of people realize that. I mean, obviously it's very important, the symbolism of, you know, I think most people would say that they get married because of the love and the commitment that they want to share. But what most people don't get, even, you know, people that can legally get married, don't get is there are a lot of rights that come with that. And so that's what we're trying to highlight at this march. So we do that. We protest there at the county clerk's office, and then we walk through downtown with the signs, and we get to City Hall, and we rally there and try to, you know, educate people, inform people about what the types of rights we can't get because we can't get married.
Now, how many people did y'all have last year, or what's been your biggest crowd so far?
I think about 3 years ago, we had about 50 people.
Okay. Now, listeners of Queer Voices, the challenge is laid out upon you. We want to double that. We want more people there. This is our cause. This is our rights. We're fighting for this. It is okay. Tell us the details. It's Friday, right?
Yeah, it's Friday. We start at 11:30 at the county clerk's office.
Where's that for people that don't know?
And that's at 201 Caroline.
Okay. So downtown.
Downtown.
Okay.
And then, you know,
is that the new civil courts building?
Yeah, it's a new civil courts building.
The big white building.
Yeah.
Across from the new jail or
yeah,
whatever.
Exactly. Okay. There's a big kind of parking lot in the middle and stuff, and all the courthouses around it.
So will there be like
and
a...
And what floor is it on, do you know?
I think it's actually on the third floor, but we'll have a big group of people out in front with signs and stuff, so you'll be able to tell which building.
Now, are y'all going
to
have...
Remember, guys, you have to go through metal detectors and all the other stuff, so, you know, now, be cautious.
Will there be like tuxes and like bridal wear for, you know... Do you get dressed up, or is it kind of more subdued?
It's a little more subdued. I think we've had a few couples that have come in tuxedos or something like that. But most people are coming out to protest. We have done a marriage ceremony in the past. Actually, we've done that every year as well, too. This year, we're not doing that. We've done a marriage ceremony at a church where we've got faith leaders from different communities come out and actually marry couples and at some of the churches. And we did the RMCC last year. Mm-hmm. And that's very
what is RMCC for our listeners that may not know?
Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church.
Yeah, we see a lot of acronyms on here, so we kind of want to.
Yeah.
Not everybody's in the lingo and everything. Yeah. Okay, so this is happening.
So then at noontime, we walk in, we get the marriage licenses, or we don't get the marriage licenses. And then we, about 12:15, we'll start marching from there down to City Hall, and we'll hang out at City Hall for about half an hour or something. So
will there be like speeches and rallies and signs and.
There'll be signs, and I think Ray Hill's coming this year, so there may be some speeches.
Oh, my gosh.
Is Ray going to get married?
You never know with Ray.
I think he's married to the city of Houston.
I think so.
He's like Queen Elizabeth and married to England. He's married to Houston.
Yeah.
Let's talk about why is marriage important. Why not civil unions? I mean, why do we need marriage as a community?
Well, for me, in my personal experience, I'm not so much hung up on the words, but what I am hung up on is that we do get the rights that everyone else has. When we've got two committed couples who have been embracing each other for 10 years, as I have with my partner, I think it's important that we all, instead of having to go through all the loopholes of having to have all the legal documents in place, straight couples don't have to have that. Heterosexual couples do not have to have those. So I think it's important that we not differentiate our in our society marriage. And marriage is civil unions, well, again, whatever you want to call it, is just two loving spirits together, committed to each other. And no need to have all these other second-class citizen types of laws and stereotypes placed against us.
Yeah, you know, on my side too, I guess, you know, first, civil unions aren't marriage, so we're second-class citizens just from the start when you call something different. But more importantly than that, like I've said before, I don't think most people understand the rights that come with marriage.
Well, let's kind of highlight the rights that you're talking about for people that may not understand.
Yeah. Like, for me, I can tell you very specifically, there are some rights, like Eric was talking about, a lot of rights you can try to contract. You can create legal agreements to try to get some of these rights. It costs a lot of money, but you can still do that. But what people don't get, there are a lot of rights that you can't contract, and a lot of those are the federal marriage rights.
Right.
So for me, I've got a partner that I've been with for 15 years.
Which is like 115 straight years, by the way.
Exactly.
Forever, yeah.
And we've been working with different types of visas to keep him here. He's an Argentine citizen, mm-hmm. and so we've been trying to keep him here for 15 years, working through different types of visas. He hasn't been able to work one of those days, and we've had to, you know, make some decisions of, we might have to move to Argentina. I might have to move away from my family. So that's one of the rights that you know, I don't get. I can't sponsor my spouse to be a citizen.
But if you were straight and you had the right to marry, it would be automatic.
It's automatic, yeah. So it comes with it.
That's a huge right that you're not provided.
Right. And you can't. I can't legally.
There's nothing you
contract
can do.
That. A lawyer can't get me that right. Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, other ones are like Social Security benefits. You know, your spouse getting your Social Security when you pass away or something,
right.
Or pension benefits, or I think family medical leave is another one also, that if your spouse is sick or if your partner's sick, you can't actually take time off of work to go take care of them. Or if they have kids, you can't take time off of work being their partner, that you're not, their kids aren't your kids, so you can't go take care of them because you're not legally married. So,
right.
You know, things like that. People don't understand that those rights aren't contracted. Those
adoption rights or other rights that we don't
adoption
have.
Adoption is huge, yeah. Yeah.
Adoption is huge, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, one of the fears I had early on before I had all the legal contracts put together is, what were to happen if something were to happen to my partner, or to me for that matter, and then having lived with each other for years and years, all of a sudden one of the partners is gone, let's say, but then the family, the mothers, the parents, the brothers and sisters come in and take over everything. It might even exclude, depending on that relationship with that family, might exclude the surviving partner from participating in ceremony, memorial services, and continuing to live in the house and have all the assets that were there before. So it's, for us, we have to go through legal contracts to make sure that doesn't happen. But there's couples, I'm sure, out there that don't have maybe the funds to do something like that. So they're still in a bad position.
Now, how do you respond when you get the religious right attacking marriage and saying that, you know, it's an abomination, that's not the work of God, da-da-da-da? How do you respond to that? I mean,
you know, it's a quest I've had in my life to try to understand, so I can counter those charges, to try to understand what the Bible says about those types of things. And I don't want to go down into a deep discussion about my personal philosophy about the Bible itself, but I do know that the Bible says a lot of things that are abominations. Eating certain types of food are abominations.
Right, right.
Shrimp.
Yeah,
you can kill the whole shrimping industry.
So there's not, you know, the Bible is not just specific to having two people of the same sex lying in bed together. It's about other things. So I question the credibility of that,
right.
Period.
Well, and I was just at a PFLAG meeting, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays.
Oh, good acronym.
Getting good at this, right? Yeah. You know, yesterday, and one of the mothers there actually said, after I was kind of describing what we did in our group, she actually said, you know, to me, it doesn't really make any sense. You know, states and governments in the U.S. should just give everybody a civil union. And, you know, because it's a civil right. The rights that come with marriage are civil rights. And then whatever religion that you're a part of, you know, then you can, you know, have your church marry you in whatever religious or family beliefs that you have. And, you know, and marriage should be done really in the churches then. But marriage is marriage here is a civil right. And, you know, so call it whatever you want to call it, everybody civilly should get the same things. And then religiously focus on what you want to do and have the ceremonies you want to have. Or if you're not, I always thought I wouldn't have one. I always thought I would just get married on some cliff and overlooking some ocean, some romantic ceremony, and not do it in a church. But,
that sounds,
you know, it's ironic
nice. Yeah.
That I actually need marriage now. So, you know.
You know, the other thought I have regarding that is there's always a stress by the religious right about marriage. And if they were so focused on that, then they should probably be out there and trying to stop divorce in the heterosexual community. It's pretty rampant. It's pretty bad right now. So that's what they should be focusing on if they really believe in that.
Absolutely. And the divorce rate is outrageous.
53% of most marriages end in divorce.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The greatest threat to a marriage in America is heterosexual divorce, not mm-hmm. gay marriage.
Exactly.
Now, you've reached out to groups for this upcoming rally. Who have you reached out to, mm-hmm. and who are you trying to get out there on Friday?
Actually, we've got a lot of groups potentially coming out. We've got, obviously, PFLAG. I was just there. A lot of people are coming out from PFLAG. We've got a lot of the schools coming out as well too. So
school,
yeah, Sci Fair district. We've got some people coming from there. Rice University, U of H. We usually get people from those universities as well. We reached out again to the religious communities and stuff. We actually, like I said, we usually do a marriage ceremony where we've got faith leaders from all these different churches that believe in LGBT people loving each other and being committed and being in relationships, and so we usually have a marriage ceremony. Those churches are talking about our events and bringing people out as well too. So
now I understand that you have a special guest invitation that's out there, someone that is running our city.
Yeah, we do. We've reached out to Anise Parker. Okay. And I actually heard back from her scheduling coordinator, and they're going to pass it by her, and it's right out in front of her new front lawn. So I think
in the back door.
Yeah, so she may join us for lunch if she doesn't have three other different engagements, but they're going to bring it by her.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I know this is what we're fighting for. Now, can single people go? Is it just for people that are wedded to be, or can the single activists get out there and fight for the rights?
No, it's definitely for everybody. I mean, we'll have, you know, straight couples out there, PFLAG parents out there. We'll have single people out there. I even told, you know, some of the young PFLAG participants there that, you know, you don't even have to be a couple. You can do it in protest. So we've got couples that will go and ask for marriage licenses and protest, and some that would actually like to get the marriage licenses. But, you know, we're out there protesting. We're out there to kind of educate people and show people what the rights are that we can't have because of marriage.
And don't forget, single people may be married one day as well, so we definitely
welcome them. Not my friends. No, I'm just kidding. No. So tell us more about when you go to the county clerk's office and they say no. I mean, that's, you've been together for 15 years, and this person behind the glass is saying, no, mm-hmm. you're not supposed to be together in the eyes of the law.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how does that feel?
Well, that's, you know, that, I guess, that was what was really surprising to me, and I think to a lot of people when we first started doing this, was we'd walk up there after protesting outside. We kind of walk up there. We knew this was just kind of a process. We knew what the answer was going to be, but you actually sit down there, and you know, there's a woman that usually does this with us, one of the clerks there, and she's very sincere and very sorry, and she kind of says, "I'm sorry, but in the state of Texas, we're not allowed to grant you marriage licenses." And you know, and it's at that point that kind of hits you. You've got you and the person that you love and that you want to commit your life to sitting next to you, and these tears just start welling up, and you don't really think it's gonna, you don't really understand that it's gonna hit you that way, but it does.
I don't think I'd want to go through that, but you know, I think it's important. And if you're out there listening, and this is important to you, and I think it's important to our community, this Friday is the march and demonstration for the right to marry, starting at the county clerk's office, and that's in the new downtown building on Caroline Street. Mm-hmm. That's 201.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. And then there's a march to City Hall.
Starts at 11:30.
Starts at 11:30. Now, is there a website, or how can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, there is a website. Our organization has a website. It's www.familymarriageequality.org.
Okay, spell it out.
Familymarriageequality.org.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
And can anybody join this organization?
Yeah, anybody can join the organization. Like I said, we'd usually put on events around this week, but we've also marched in the Pride Parade, and we try to do some other educational events around the year. So,
well,
come out and join us.
Well, Barry, is there anything else you want our listeners to know about?
I guess the only thing I'd mention is, you know, like I said, we usually have these ministers come out and marry us. So it's not a problem with our churches, our religions, our faiths. You know, they will marry us. It's the problem with our government and equal rights within the United States that the Constitution tells us we should have, right? So I really don't understand why we're having this conversation, why we're still fighting this fight, because it's all about equal rights. Same thing with interracial marriages back in the 60s.
Exactly.
And, you know, I believe everybody in the United States deserves equal rights, and I'm not sure why we don't have them yet.
We were talking to Barry Ouellette, the president of the Foundation for Family and Marriage Equality, along with Eric Marine. Thank you very much.
This is Queer Voices.
KPFT's 40th birthday is March 1st, and we want you to design the T-shirt for our 40th year that best exemplifies the Pacifica mission and the uniqueness of KPFT. T-shirt designs will be posted on our website, kpft.org. You can vote for the design you like best by sending your vote to 40thT-shirt@kpft.org, one vote per email address. Votes must be in by 10 a.m. February 25th. The top 3 to 5 design contenders will be determined through community voting. The final winning design will be chosen by a panel of judges composed of artists from the KPFT community. And the winning design will be printed on T-shirts, banners and flyers, and other materials for our 40th year. The winning artist will receive 5 T-shirts with their design printed on it and an Insignia portable HD radio. For full details, visit our website, kpft.org, and thanks for listening to KPFT Houston.
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Brian Levinka, and I have
Jennifer
to
Renee.
Jennifer Renee. I have to give a disclaimer. I am the board chair for the Center for AIDS, and next guest is coming out to do a fundraiser for us, and he is the extremely funny comedian out of New York. His name is Eddie Sarfati. Eddie, are you out there?
Yeah. Hey, Brian. How are you?
Good. You are on Queer Voices in Houston, and we are the gay radio show, and I'm so glad to have you on. And tell us about you, Eddie. I've seen you on Logo, but tell us more about where people may have seen you before.
A lot of people in the community know me from performing in Provincetown, Massachusetts for many years, or from Atlantis Cruises, RSVP Cruises. I can currently be seen on the Logo station in their show Wisecrack, and also in the documentary Laughing Matters. And I currently have a new book out called Mental, Funny in the Head, which I've been getting a lot of great reactions to, and I'm really excited about that.
And so you're coming to Houston to do a fundraiser, and I understand that you've done this around the country. Tell us how you kind of started doing these fundraisers and what started you to do that.
Well, it started out that, you know, I never set out to necessarily be the gay comic, but because I was willing to talk about my experiences coming out and, you know, in the gay world, I started getting hired for all kinds of events within the community. And this is a chance for me to support the community that's supported me for many years.
Well, okay, now if you're listening out there, listeners, the event is going to be Sunday, February 28th at Riva's Restaurant. Everybody knows Riva's. It's at 1117 Missouri Street. And although we can't discuss the prices of the tickets, we're nonprofit, the tickets are available at brownpapertickets.com. And there are several layers, or I guess different levels of ticketing. You can have a dinner, the VIP package, or just the show. So, Eddie, tell us, what do they get with the VIP package?
Well, the VIP package, of course, gets a delicious Italian buffet at Rivas and preferred seating at the show, free champagne, and an autographed copy of my new book, Mental, Funny in the Head.
So you were on, you know, the thing I love is the thing you do with Margaret Cho. And I think you did something with Margaret Cho, right, on Logo?
Right, on Wisecrack. She was the host of the show.
Oh, my God. I worship Margaret Cho. So I think a lot of people identify with that. But let me see. Tell us about your website, too. You have a really funny website.
My website is keeplaughing.com, and you can find out all about me, my book, a short film called Second Guessing Grandma, which has been made of the first story in the book and has played at festivals all around the country, including several overseas in Brazil and Bosnia and Italy. And it stars Tony Award-winning actress Kathleen Chalfant. And it's a very funny story, very sweet, and I think people will enjoy it.
Now, tell us a little bit how you came up with mental. What does it mean to be mental?
Well, it's kind of a phrase I use when things get a little too full of anxiety and a little too frantic. I just get mental. You know, the book is a collection of 10 humorous essays, but they're also about some pretty serious topics, including my own bouts with depression, which are a laugh riot, of course. Yeah. And, coming out to my 95-year-old grandmother, I talk about my first experiences meeting guys online, which paralleled my mom's first foray into internet dating. And
tell me about that. This is Jennifer. Tell me. What was
this
that?
This is my co-host, Jennifer Renee, and she's interested.
I just kept saying that. I love that homoneurotic comedy. I just loved it. Where'd you get that?
I was born with it, unfortunately. You know, I'm a depressed New York Jew.
Aren't we all kind of...
in the body of a horny gay guy.
Aren't we all homoneurotic kind of in our own way, I think?
Well, probably. I think, growing up gay in the straight world, you develop all kinds of tics and quirks and eccentricities, and humor has been a real godsend to me as a way to deal with my own discomfort with situations, my own discomfort with myself, and, it's really been a life-saving thing for me.
Now, I understand you have ties to Houston. Isn't someone you know from Houston or lives around Houston?
My boyfriend actually grew up not in Houston, but in Austin.
Oh, okay.
And his family was in San Antonio, and I got to come to Texas. We did an event in Dallas a couple of months ago.
That's our evil rival city. We don't like them.
It's your evil rival city. Well, this show's going to be much better.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
I'm going to send them pictures just so that they feel awful.
There you go. You know, we have a lesbian mayor now, so we're like kind of this...
I know. Is she coming to the show?
Well, you know, I don't... She's really busy running the city, but, you know, I can...
Well, being a lesbian, running a city... Who could need laughs more than that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, when I saw the flyer, I immediately pulled out my date minder and got it where I put that on there. Because humor and comedy, especially when it comes from someone in our own community, is always fun. Fun evening. Rivas is not as big as... a big enough venue for everybody.
How did you pick Rivas? Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, one of the members of the board of the Center for AIDS recommended that I talk to the owners there who were very interested in doing an event.
I see.
And, hopefully, if we sell out, we'll just add a second show.
Yes, I heard that you...
I was hoping you'd say that.
Well, okay, so listeners of Queer Voices, the gauntlet has been thrown. Go and buy tickets, and we want to sell out two shows.
Right, and actually, since it... there is a chance that the first show will sell out pretty quickly, so I suggest that people go to brownpapertickets.com as soon as possible.
Yeah, absolutely, because this is going to a good cause, the Center for AIDS. It's a cause near and dear to my heart, and I very much appreciate this opportunity to do a fundraiser. And, I mean, what better night than a night of comedy, food, friends, and, just a wonderful evening.
And that's exactly.
And you're hilarious too. I'm going to be out of town, unfortunately. I'm going to be in Malaysia for work, so I'm going to miss it. But I'm so upset.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I'll just have to come back.
Yeah.
Well, I was fascinated by what you were saying coming out to your grandmother. Tell us something about that.
Oh, my grandmother.
Tell us that story. I can just imagine this Jewish grandmother.
My grandmother was 95, and she kept, I didn't want to tell her I was gay because I didn't know how she'd respond, and she kept asking, and finally I said, I'm gay, and the first thing she said was, it's that gym where you go, that's where they all are.
You caught it off the
like
gym.
Like grandmother, yes, that's.
And then she, you know, she didn't understand it. She was confused, and then she hit me up and said, "You don't like a girl to get married. I understand you're like a boy, but what can you do? Not like making love to a girl." And I kept trying to avoid her, and she kept, you know, she wouldn't stop. She wouldn't give up. And finally, I blurted out that I have two hands.
Oh.
Oh.
You're like, well, Grandma, and, let me tell you what it does.
Yeah. And then she said, she whispered to me, you know, I hear that some of the boys use the behind. And I said, Grandma, what an excellent idea.
Now, what about your mom and dad? Did they find out around the same time, or...?
Yeah, they knew before. They're very, very cool. I'm very fortunate the parents would be so supportive. You know, my mom called me up and said, Daddy and I are coming to march with you in the Gay Pride Parade. And I was so excited. I was practically crying into the receiver. And I was like, you're the best. Dad's the best. And as I'm hanging up the phone, I was thinking, man, do I really want them there ruining my good time?
I kill your action, yeah.
Yeah, so I told them they could come to the parade, but they had to wear T-shirts that said domineering mother and distant dad.
Oh, that's great. That's great. What was it like getting online and for finding that first relationship?
Oh, talk. Well, I didn't find a relationship online. Oh. I actually, first of all,
that was a misnomer. I can't help it.
Talk about mental. People are crazy.
Oh my God! Yes, lies, lies, lies.
You know, I had actually had been through a bad breakup, and of course, I wasn't going to date anyone seriously. And I had my picture taken for a magazine article that people thought was great, and I put it online. And you know, people are crazy. I put up a profile that just said, I tried to be very hip, and it said, open to any role, position, toy, equipment, costume, fantasy, as long as it's safe, painless, and not too messy.
Wow.
I bet you got some responses to that.
I got some responses. Actually, I had to add the not too messy part because people were a little
there's
bit...
There's some preferences there's out there that you really don't want to think about. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm actually, that's a whole chapter in my book about the craziness online.
Absolutely. It's mental. So is your routine mostly based on your book or is it more about your life experiences?
No, my the book and the... There's a couple of things that overlap, but it's... The stuff on the book was fresh. It wasn't stuff that I took from my routine. Because the book allowed me to talk about things that in some ways, were more complex than just telling jokes about it.
Right, right.
You know, I had a great experience. I took my parents to Europe after my father was diagnosed with dementia. And, you know, it was heartbreaking, and it was hysterical at the same time.
Oh.
And it's really, it's my favorite part of the book, and the part that seems to have generated the most letters from people. And, you know, it was just a really great experience.
What are some of your favorite stories?
In the book, or...?
No. When you come and you stand up there and start talking to the audience. What are some of your favorite stories that come to mind?
Well, I talk a lot about family stuff. You know, it's not necessarily gay-themed material. Everyone has a family that gets on their nerves.
Oh, yes.
So I talk about my brother's wedding, my father's funeral, putting my grandmother in the home. You know, growing up, I was a fat kid. I was the only Jewish kid on my block.
Wow, you don't look like you were fat when you were younger. Your picture is very fit looking.
Well, he went to the gym a lot.
Stated and airbrushed.
Well, it looks good. It looks like a perfect online profile picture now.
Well, that's the thing is be careful online. No one looks like their picture.
I know. Take it with a grain of salt.
Basically, I've decided that. The reason those sites work is because everyone is better in theory.
Yes, it's virtual, like community and virtual.
Yeah, and
bar.
You can read the pictures too. You know, if if you're looking at someone's picture and there's, a McGovern bumper sticker in the background or a Jarve Tang on the counter,
flash forward.
You know, it's like carbon dating.
Yeah. It's gay dating.
Well, bring your gay material, because this is going to be a very gay crowd, I predict, at
Rivas.
Yeah,
well, I mean, you know, talk about a little bit of everything.
Yes. Now, how is it to perform in P-Town? I bet that's a riot.
P-Town's great, because I get to meet people from all over the country. It's people scrimp and save all year to spend 1 week there, and I get to be there for several months at a time.
Yes.
You've been to P-Town.
Yes.
And for the people who don't know, not only do you do your show, there's probably about 20 shows going on at any given time in town, because a lot of gay and lesbian and drag performers go there. And it's, everyone has this short season to make money. So you're out promoting your show all day, chatting people up. You know, it's like being on all day. I go through pretty much a six-pack of Red Bull every morning just to be, lively and vivacious on the street and make people laugh. And it's fun. It's very, very fun.
Now, are you there during 4th of July week, or are you there, like, during the Bear Week? Or?
I've been there for Bear Week. I've been there for Leather Week. I've been there for Women's Week. I've been there for everything. This year, I'll be there for some of it. I don't know how much of it I'll be there for, because I have some other projects going on. I've been there for Single Men's Week, and, it's just great. There's something for everyone. It's gay, but it's mixed, and
it's like a little gay village, I think. It's just like a
happy
place.
It's not totally gay. I like it. There's a lot to do there. There's great art galleries and restaurants and shows, and of course the National Seashore is spectacular.
Absolutely. Now, we don't have a seashore in Houston per se. I mean, it's kind of about 50 miles away in Galveston. But you've been here before, haven't you?
I actually have never been to Houston before.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I was in Texas the first time a couple of months ago. I was in Dallas and I was in San Antonio, and I went to a wedding in a tiny little town called Edna.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my.
I know where that is.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is a tiny town.
Well, yeah. I was the only gay in the village.
No, there were probably others. But
there were others. They were just closeted.
Well, definitely when you come to Houston, be sure to check out the sites. Montrose is kind of the area that our people reside. But your partner is from Texas?
Yeah, he grew up in Austin. His family lives in San Antonio.
Very good. Well, we've been talking to Eddie. Is it Sarfati?
Sarfati.
Eddie Sarfati. And he is coming to Houston Sunday, February 28th, and he's putting on a performance, a fundraising performance, hint, hint, at Rivas for the Center for AIDS, and tickets are available at different cost on brownpapertickets.com. And he's funny. He's on Logo. He's been...
Yeah. And people can hit me up on Facebook or at my website, keeplaughing.com.
Absolutely. And we appreciate you coming on the show tonight, and especially coming at the end of the month. And I must say that Houston's own Coffee Drag Superstar will be opening for Amy.
I know. I can't wait. That's exciting.
She could not be on tonight. She had a karaoke conflict.
A karaoke conflict.
Yes, I love that. She's a local entertainment.
That's a karaoke emergency.
Yes, well, it becomes an emergency if she's not there. But she will be opening the show. So I highly, highly recommend that you go out and get tickets very soon, because I feel like this is going to sell out, and you need to get your tickets.
Well, I liked on the flyer I saw, you can have dinner in the performance, so it's not like you're just going to be sitting there.
Exactly.
So,
you got to eat anyway. You might as well have a few laughs.
Yes,
you can help out a good cause. The people at the Center for AIDS do a lot of great work for the community.
Absolutely.
And, we'll have a good time.
Well, very good. Eddie, thank you for coming on, and check out keeplaughing.com for more information.
Excellent. Thanks a lot. Look forward to it.
Thank you.
This is Queer Voices.
It's been 17 years since Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the U.S. ban on military service by open gays and lesbians, was enacted by Congress and signed into law by President Bill Clinton. As a result, more than 13,500 outed service members have been discharged, including mission-critical personnel, such as Arabic language specialists. President Barack Obama has consistently criticized the policy, and he renewed his vow to end it in his State of the Union address last week. Despite the administration's previous pledges, new testimony from Pentagon officials to the Senate Armed Services Committee on February 2nd was the most tangible sign of action. Defense Secretary Robert Gates offered some specifics.
Mr. Chairman, last week during the State of the Union address, the President announced he will work with Congress this year to repeal the law known as Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He subsequently directed the Department of Defense to begin the preparations necessary for a repeal of the current law and policy. I fully support the President's decision. The question before us is not whether the military prepares to make this change, but how we best prepare for it. We received our orders from the Commander-in-Chief, and we are moving out accordingly. However, we can also take this process only so far, as the ultimate decision rests with you, the Congress. I am mindful of the fact, as are you, that unlike the last time this issue was considered by the Congress more than 15 years ago, our military is engaged in two wars that have put troops and their families under considerable stress and strain. I am mindful as well that attitudes toward homosexuality may have changed considerably, both in society generally and in the military, over the intervening years. To ensure that the Department is prepared should the law be changed, and working in close consultation with Admiral Mullen, I have appointed a high-level working group within the Department that will immediately begin a review of the issues associated with properly implementing a repeal of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. The mandate of this working group is to thoroughly, objectively, and methodically examine all aspects of this question and produce its finding and recommendations in the form of an implementation plan by the end of this calendar year. Mr. Chairman, I expect that our approach may cause some to wonder why it will take the better part of a year to accomplish the task. We've looked at a variety of options, but when you take into account the overriding imperative to get this right and minimize disruption to a force that is actively fighting two wars and working through the stress of almost a decade of combat, then it is clear to us we must proceed in a manner that allows for the thorough examination of all issues. To ensure that this process is able to accomplish its important mission, Chairman Mullen and I have determined that we need to appoint the highest level officials to carry it out. Accordingly, I am naming the Department of Defense General Counsel, Jay Johnson, and General Carter Hamm, Commander of U.S. Army Europe, to serve as the co-chairs for this effort. Simultaneous with launching this process, I have also directed the Department to quickly review the regulations used to implement the current Don't Ask, Don't Tell law, and within 45 days present to me recommended changes to those regulations that, within existing law, will enforce this policy in a fairer manner. You may recall that I asked the Department's General Counsel to conduct a preliminary review of this matter last year. Based on that preliminary review, we believe that we have a degree of latitude within the existing law to change our internal procedures in a manner that is more appropriate and fair to our men and women in uniform. We will now conduct a final detailed assessment of this proposal before proceeding.
Sitting beside Secretary Gates was Joint Chiefs of Staff Chair Admiral Michael Mullen.
Mr. Chairman, speaking for myself and myself only, it is my personal belief that allowing gays and lesbians to serve openly would be the right thing to do. No matter how I look at this issue, I cannot escape being troubled by the fact that we have in place a policy which forces young men and women to lie about who they are in order to defend their fellow citizens. For me, personally, it comes down to integrity. Theirs as individuals and ours as an institution. I also believe that the great young men and women of our military can and would accommodate such a change. I never underestimate their ability to adapt. But I do not know this for a fact, nor do I know for a fact how we would best make such a major policy change in a time of two wars. that there will be some disruption in the force, I cannot deny. That there will be legal, social, and perhaps even infrastructure changes to be made certainly seem plausible. We would all like to have a better handle on these types of concerns, and this is what our review will offer. The American people may yet have a different view. You may have a different view. I think that's important, and it's important to have that discussion. Frankly, there are those on both sides of this debate who speak as if there is no debate, as if there is nothing to be learned or reflected upon. I hope we can be more thoughtful than that. Balance, Mr. Chairman, balance and thoughtfulness is what we need most right now. It's what the President has promised us, and it's what we ask of you and this body.
Republican senators revisited many of the same old arguments about close quarters and sexual temptation in their comments and questions. Peter Sprigg, senior fellow for policy studies at the right-wing Family Research Council, also regurgitated many of the expected talking points during a joust with the host of MSNBC's Hardball with Chris Matthews.
Military life is unlike civilian life. Soldiers are put in the positions of forced intimacy all the time. They shower together, they sleep together in the barracks, and it's simply unfair to put soldiers in a position of forced cohabitation with those who may be viewing them as a sexual object. That is a formula guaranteed to lead to greater sexual tension, sexual harassment, and even sexual assault.
But my dad was in the military. My brother's in the military. Everybody I know who's ever been in the military says there are gay people in the military, and they're known to be gay. What do you say? We don't want to have a situation where gay people are in forced intimacy with straight people, but isn't that the case now? It's simply not official. Isn't that the case now? Are you saying there are no gay people in the barracks or on submarines or in any other kind of intimate setting, as you put it?
There are people who have experienced homosexual attractions, who have served in the military and do continue to serve in the military, but they are restrained in their behavior by the current policy. The military should not be used as an avenue for social reengineering. The purpose of the military is to fight and win wars.
Okay, let me ask you, Peter, do you think people choose to be gay?
People do not choose to have same-sex attractions, but they do choose to engage in homosexual conduct.
Do you think we should outlaw gay behavior?
Well, I think certainly...
I'm just asking you, should we outlaw gay behavior?
I think that the Supreme Court decision in Lawrence v. Texas, which overturned the sodomy laws in this country, was wrongly decided. I think there would be a place for criminal sanctions against homosexual behavior.
So we should outlaw gay behavior?
Yes.
MSNBC's progressive, openly lesbian commentator Rachel Maddow attended the Senate Armed Services Committee hearing on February 2nd. Her reporting on the event that night included, in part...
You may know that Chris Matthews here at MSNBC does a hardball college tour. Right before the midterm elections in 2006, Chris had Senator John McCain on the college tour with him in Iowa. They took questions from the crowd.
The military needs as many fine young men and women as it can get. Yeah. So why do we still have a policy that discriminates on the basis of declared sexual orientation?
I listen to people like General Colin Powell, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and literally every military leader that I know, and they testified before Congress that they felt that the don't ask, don't tell policy was the most appropriate way to conduct ourselves in the military. But the day that the leadership of the military comes to me and says, Senator, we ought to change the policy, then I think we ought to consider seriously changing it.
That was John McCain speaking in 2006, telling Hardball that the day the leadership of the military says that don't ask, don't tell should be changed, on that day, he'd consider changing the policy. That day was today. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen, and the defense secretary, Bob Gates, both expressed unreserved support for repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And even though John McCain is on record saying that's what he would need to hear to be able to consider changing the policy, that isn't how John McCain reacted at today's hearing at all.
Has this policy been ideal? No, it is not. But it has been effective. It has helped to balance a potentially disruptive tension between the desires of a minority and the broader interests of our all-volunteer force.
In fact, he sort of blew a gasket.
I'm deeply disappointed in your statement, Secretary Gates. Your statement obvious is one which is clearly biased. You are embarking on saying it's not whether the military prepares to make the change, but how we best prepare for it, without ever hearing from members of Congress.
In addition to Senator McCain doing his big, awkward, angry public flip-flop on the matter, Senator Saxby Chambliss of Georgia tried on an argument that had at least one person in the hearing room, who was sitting about three rows behind me, audibly snorting coffee out of his or her nose.
Military society is characterized by its own laws, rules, customs, and traditions, including restrictions on personal behavior that would not be acceptable in civilian society. Examples include alcohol use, adultery, fraternization, and body art. If we change this rule of don't ask, don't tell, what are we going to do with these other issues?
Saxby Chambliss, our nation's watchdog over whether more civil rights will inexorably lead to more tattoos. Senator Carl Levin, the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, made clear that dropping don't ask, don't tell can happen with not 60 votes, but 50 in the Senate, or maybe even 40. This was a sort of subtle but important moment at the hearing. Watch his exchange here with Joe Lieberman.
It's up to us in the Congress and in the Senate. We've got to get 60 votes to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, or else it will remain in effect.
Unless there's a provision inside the Defense Authorization Bill that goes to the floor, which would then require an amendment to strike it from the bill, in which case the 60-vote rule would be turning the other way.
Senator Levin is saying that on the Senate side, if repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell could be done as part of a big defense bill, big defense authorization bill, which is how Don't Ask, Don't Tell became law in the first place, then it would actually take 60 votes to kill the repeal, not 60 votes to hold on to the policy. Leadership from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen, is likely to make all the difference.
It does go to, again, a fundamental principle with me, which is everybody counts. And part of the struggle back to the institutional integrity aspect of this.
Well, I know. I appreciate your view.
And putting individuals in a position that every single day they wonder whether today is going to be the day, and devaluing them in that regard just is inconsistent with us as an institution. I have served with homosexuals since 1968. Everybody in the military has, and we understand that. So it is a number of things which cumulatively, for me personally, get me to this position. Senator Sessions, for me, this is not about command influence. This is about leadership.
Joining us now is Lieutenant Colonel Victor Fehrenbach, an F-15 fighter pilot, a 19-year veteran of the United States Air Force, decorated for heroism. Lieutenant Colonel Fehrenbach was outed by a civilian acquaintance in the midst of an unblemished career, and although he wants to continue to serve his country, his discharge under Don't Ask, Don't Tell is pending. When I was in the hearing room today at the Senate, listening to those Republican senators talk about how well Don't Ask, Don't Tell works, how effective it is, in my mind, I just wanted to hear your response to that. What is your response?
I would like to hear those that are proponents of this law to explain to me how it's possibly successful, how it's working. I can show you evidence how it's unconstitutional. I can show you evidence how it's blatant discrimination. I can show you evidence how it's it hurts the combat effectiveness of my squadron in particular. And then when you do it 13,500 times over with people with critical combat skills in the middle of two wars at the cost of billions of dollars, how it hurts national security as a whole. And then I can show you, I can invite these people to come to work with me tomorrow and show you how military professionals don't care about someone's personal private life. They care about somebody who's able to execute the mission, who's dedicated, and who's professional. That's what the people I work with care about every day.
Are you disappointed that the military says it needs a year to study and figure out implementation? Does that seem appropriate to you?
Well, Rachel, that was actually one tiny thing that did disappoint me today. This issue has been studied for over 15 years now. And the best example I can give is, you know, we've got 25 allied countries that we work with and go to war with every day, and they have ended their bans. And I've actually served with people from Australia, Canada, and United Kingdom. I've been deployed with them in Tent City and gone to war with them. And and it was a non-issue for them. And, you know, if we need a year to talk about the issues that we do need to tackle, and there are important issues that we'll need to look at. They talked about housing and others. You know, all we need to do is look at the models of our 25 allies. They've tackled these issues and come up with solutions. So I don't think that takes a year. I think we can make a few phone calls and get this done in maybe 30 or 60 days.
How important is it, do you think, for leaders like the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral Mullen, today to show personal leadership on this, to say that he's personally committed to repealing this and to doing it right? Do you think that's significant?
Absolutely, Rachel. I think this was a hopeful, promising, historic day. This is the first time we've seen military leaders, you know, the very top of the military, make these kinds of statements. And I do want to just say I was overwhelmed by Admiral Mullen's statements. I was overwhelmed by his commitment. It sounded personal. It sounded from the heart that this wasn't something he was told to do. This was something that was personal and really meant something to him. And I was overwhelmed by that today.
Lieutenant Colonel Victor Fehrenbach's Don't Ask, Don't Tell discharge was pending when he spoke this week with Rachel Maddow. You can find more of Hardball with Chris Matthews and The Rachel Maddow Show at www.msnbc.com. And finally,
I listen to people like General Colin Powell, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
General Colin Powell chaired the Joint Chiefs of Staff in 1993 when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was implemented. But the day after the Senate Armed Services Committee hearing this week, he issued a statement saying that he now fully supports its repeal. Attitudes and circumstances have changed, he wrote. I fully support the new approach presented to the Senate Armed Services Committee this week by Secretary of Defense Gates and Admiral Mullen, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Michael LeBeau and Santina Giordano contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is only made possible by our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, listen to our podcasts, read the text of this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alert, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on Trans FM, Broward County, Florida, 5UV, Adelaide, South Australia, KRCL, Salt Lake City, Utah, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Before we thank our guest tonight, we want to remind you next week we'll be raising money for KPFT, and we'll be doing an interview about the movie that's coming back to Houston called Word Is Out, and it's going to be playing at the Museum of Fine Arts Houston.
And we want to thank Mona Kiesling with the National Center for Transgender Equality, and we talked about a lot of things having to do with the trans community, which include ENDA, which includes all of us in the GLBT community.
And then we had the Foundation for Family and Marriage Equality with President Barry Wallet and Eric Marine talking about the upcoming rally on Friday to the right to marry and demonstration in front of City Hall. And then finally we had Eddie Sarfati, the comedian who is coming into town to do a fundraiser for the Center for AIDS on February 28th. So check that out at keeplaughing.com.
And, of course, we had This Way Out and News Wrap.
Thank you.
This is Queer Voices.
You've been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, and Jack Valensky, with contributing editors Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. The music heard on this program is provided by J.D. Doyle, who also contributes to the audio file segment of This Way Out and who produces Queer Music Heritage, which is an hour-long feature of Queer Voices the fourth Monday of every month. For more information, visit JD's website at queermusicheritage.com. And listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
KPFT's 40th birthday is March 1st, and we want you to design the T-shirt for our 40th year that best exemplifies the Pacifica mission and the uniqueness of KPFT. T-shirt designs will be posted on our website, kpft.org. You can vote for the design you like best by sending your vote to 40thT-shirt at kpft.org, one vote per email address. Votes must be in by 10 a.m. February 25th. The top 3 to 5 design contenders will be determined through community voting. The final winning design will be chosen by a panel of judges composed of artists from the KPFT community. And the winning design will be printed on T-shirts, banners, and flyers and other materials for our 40th year. The winning artist will receive 5 T-shirts with their design printed on it and an Insignia portable HD radio. For full details, visit our website, kpft.org, and thanks for listening to KPFT Houston. On behalf of KPFT, thank you for your support this past year. In 2010, KPFT celebrates our 40th birthday, and we expect even greater things in this year ahead. Please take a moment to think of how much you relied on KPFT. KPFT has shared visions of a better world.
I like Love Anonymous more than Murder Incorporated, or shall we say South Africa.
There comes a time when people get tired of being trampled over by the iron feet of oppression.
And the disease of the spirit lives in the mindset.
In honor of KPFT's 40th birthday, please make a tax-deductible contribution today. Every donation helps. Visit us online at kpft.org or call 713-526-4000 to support KPFT, to shorten our on-air pledge drives, to keep us growing. We look forward to serving you throughout KPFT's 40th birthday year here in 2010, and thanks for listening to KPFT Houston.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.